why Telethe is now owned and cared for, and made more beautiful than ever, by a lovely family of very old friends, related to me through marriage. They have taken over the farms, improved the entire countryside and made a great success out of their project by constructing a series of lakes down the great valley and planting pine trees over the hillsides. What happiness it was to know that Akin had come back, even for so short a time. How the places he touched all changed for the better. The heights of Cathkin are now part of a beautiful reserve, protected by the government, where only authorized persons are allowed to pass through the security gates. Further away, Flying Saucer Hill has been left untouched by the destructive hand of humankind, protected and cared for by good, civilized people. Where my cottage had been in Parktone, a beautiful park now spreads its joy for the people of Johannesburg. Good comes out of all things when the contacts are right and the people are in harmony. The steep, southern slopes of Flying Saucer Hill tumble into the blue waters of the lake where the wild geese and the ducks skim over the tranquil surface to land and nest in the reeds and willows bordering the far distances of shoreline. I was invited back there, to the rolling hills of my childhood days, and we all celebrated with a delicious luncheon and Rhine wines. I was taken up the slopes of Flying Saucer Hill in a Land Rover, as I could not walk up it anymore because of my heart condition. My hosts were all so wonderful and made me feel that I had really come home again. Akin's spaceship hovered over the mountaintop and the excitement was electric. My hosts telephoned other people in the area to tell them to look for the spaceship and watch for it before the mist came down over the hills. I heard the Zulu call out, their voices echoing in the hills, "God has come." The Land Rover was fitted with a two-way radio, so the message went out. I saw Akin again as he came to my side by means of a light ray projected in a three-dimensional image of simple patterns of electronic charges. He was a projection, but I saw him as if in real life. The illusion of his human presence was perfect but for the sensations of touch and smell. By means of this laser light, Akin was able to project three-dimensional images of himself and Dailing to speak to me and reassure me of his constant love and thoughts. The proximity of the tube of light in which they were standing felt like the electric mirage had when I had approached its curtain in the mothership, and a prickling sensation rippled through my body. "Oh," I said to them, "can't I come too, even in the laser light, rather than stay here?" "Not at present," Akin said gently. "But within the next 5 years of Earth time, my beloved." Dailing blew me a kiss with his hand. He was as tall and agile as his father and his face was breathtakingly handsome, with an unusual and fascinating beauty. Straight golden hair hung to his shoulders and his golden eyes looked into mine with deep love. But the whole image faded away, and there was nothing left. Heartbroken, I turned away. No wonder my heart is now so sorely affected. For the second time, I allowed emotion to take its toll. The first time was many years ago, when my friend Nesli comforted me. She has remained my dearest friend ever since. This was a lesson for me to learn to understand that change and the process of creation go on forever, and that one must move with the constant change and evolution of the universe. Nothing is ever static. Nothing remains the same. In this way, by realizing that, one moves in harmony and becomes ageless by accepting the inevitable destiny of all things in a changing universe. Akin keeps a constant watch and surveillance on our sun and our solar system. It is not static and finished, it is still being formed, still evolving. A second star will one day light up our solar system. The black and orange atmospheric bands of Jupiter's disk cover a warming furnace in which thermonuclear reactions have already started. Thus Jupiter radiates life-giving light to its family of small planets, while a vast vortex storm, the beginnings of sunspots or star material triggered off by magnetism, forms the vast red spot that astronomers have pondered for centuries. Humankind now must learn to adapt to a higher vibratory rate as our atmosphere changes within the forming binary system. Cosmic rays will intensify with the radiation from two stars affecting Earth's climate in dramatic and awesome ways. the outer aspiring stars, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune continue to evolve and generate life, giving light to their families of surrounding planets, satellites and debris. They will form still more solar systems as they mature and light up into stars, and as life is generated within by everlasting change. All planets are cooled down stars. Moons, asteroids, comets and the debris of stars, pieces of star failure. All things have a reason for being, even black holes, which have bugged scientists for years. These are pockets of minimum temperature within the galaxy where light cannot penetrate, vortex residues that are highly dangerous and can suck any substance or energy into their whirlpool gravitation. Spaceships avoid them because the unified field propulsion systems would be nullified by such an encounter. Therefore, spaceships move around the equatorial perimeter of such anomalies within the electromagnetic plasma of the galaxy. The universe of light never takes one thing away unless something else is given. I have experienced the effects of a higher vibratory rate from the light of three stars. I know what it will mean to life within the Sun's system, as the entire collection of stars, planets, moons, asteroids and debris moves into the higher octaves of existence, toward its destiny within the Milky Way galaxy. Humans of this system have always thought of their existence as the Alpha and Omega of all things. Their consciousness is barely able to absorb the simplicity of their environment. Mathematical monstrosities are not necessary to explain it all, but their complicated science develops still more into a monster of mathematics and machines. The knowledge of the universe has always existed. Even the Greeks knew of the unified field within the electromagnetic wavelength of light, which comprises all of creation. They brought it into their alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta are harmonic sounds to interact with the four forces of light, the rhythm resonating within our brains. This will give us the alpha rhythm of achievement, where equanimity maintains a part of everyday life so long as no conflict is involved. Universal harmonics is the mathematics used by Akan's civilization. He speaks of harmonic maths, an harmonic affinity with all substance, a resonance tuned to matter itself expressed in terms of light. A simple equation gives us the answer to the unified field propulsion systems for interstellar spaceships. A unified field equation of seven-figure harmonics is the key to space travel. This simple equation is clear in my mind. The harmonic of anti-gravity through the harmonic of light being doubled, alters the geometric of time, and our awareness of reality in the physical sense will shift from one spatial point to another. This is based on space-time geometries within the unified field that permeates all of existence. Of all the many thousands of Earth's scientists, only Einstein could find the simplicity of the universe in his harmonic equation, E equals mc square. He achieved this by maintaining a fairly continuous alpha rhythm, keeping his brain in patterns of relaxed attention. Look what came out of it, though: the atomic bomb, the destruction of material substance and its conversion into pure energy. Akan, as a great physicist, can reverse the process. Physical substance in any desired shape is produced from pure energy, hence the atomic structure of the interstellar spaceships of light, which are completely smooth and all in one piece. The composition of the material of the spaceship conducts energy to generate the unified field propulsion systems. As a natural celestial object, it achieves a shift in space and time in the frequency of light, which is so very different to the nuts and bolts flying saucers constructed by people of Earth, which are purely atmospheric craft and propelled by jets. Akan's spaceship resonates at harmonics tuned to light between the two cycles of matter and antimatter, manifesting in alternate pulses. Therefore, it moves instantaneously through the double cycle within the electromagnetic wavelength of the universe. It uses the fabric of space itself, altering the space-time geometric matrix. The spaceship acts as a protection for the people within it as it changes position through the unified field. We are all creatures of light, composed of microatoms, the ultimate particle. We are built up from a combination of wavelengths of the creative force, which we call light or God. The universe of light never takes one thing away, but something else is given. My grandson Astley, my daughter's child, is now 4 years old. He is another golden boy, whose blue-gray eyes already have the look of distance, the look of intelligent wisdom that sees beyond the limited horizons of earthbound people. Other star children have been born to friends who named them Akin or Playa, immortalizing my beloved and my dear friends from outer space. And what about the planet Earth? Can its teeming billions survive in such a small and vulnerable world? Can their mass leveling and conformity produce leaders to solve the many problems they will face within the next 5 years, so that they might survive their time and live into ours and join our community of galactic civilizations? The nucleus of our galaxy emits a stream of energy, the light we are all made out of. The release of microatoms of light from oxygen is the source of all life, and microatoms in greater unities are equal to atoms. All of creation is light. Acknowledgements. During the past 21 years I have had the assistance of many hundreds of South Africans, foreign citizens and officials to whom I would like to express my gratitude. My deepest appreciation and gratitude to Mr. Hollidge and Mr. Tucker of Matheson and Hollidge, whose wonderful and unforgettable kindness, generosity, interest and care in my welfare have given me the time and strength to create this beautiful book. I also wish to thank and express my deep appreciation to Carl and Annie Vate, who gave their selfless cooperation in the publication of this book, and for the inestimable value of Manfred Landeck's translation he was tuned to my frequency. I wish to express my deep appreciation to the late Air Chief Marshal Lord Dowding. I also express appreciation to Dr. Myring Nord, Scientific Advisor to the Prime Minister, Professor Tuzanius, Professor Wilson, International Liaison Lawyer and Jurist Consultant to the British Institute, the South African Air Force, South African Security Police, Major and Mrs. Jock Flower and Major Aubrey Fielding, British Intelligence M10, for their valued encouragement and help. A special tribute is due to SABC, SABC TV and the South African Press. I wish to thank all the broadcasters and members of the press who have supported me and given publicity to this book, among many of them, Mrs. Joy Anderson, Mrs. Doreen Levin, Chris Vermack, Richard Gibbs, Jan de Wall, Hilary Prendini, Petra Biotis, Colonel Stephen Grenfell of the BBC, the Argus Group of Newspapers, the Citizen and Fair Lady Magazines, Hoofstad, Dagbreek and many other news media. Finally, I want to express my love and gratitude to my daughter, Dr. Marilyn Phillips, my son, David Clara, my sister, Mrs. Barbara McKenzie, my dearest friend, Mrs. Nestle Schmutz, and Mrs. Stephanie Millis, who understood and supported my aspirations. I also want to thank our very dear Gus, Mrs. Augusta Sell, for giving me her thoughtful care, and to Jeff and Lynette Wilson for giving me such a lovely home to live in. Time on the Cosmic Level. This book is about time on the cosmic level, with new data not yet registered on scientific instruments. The reader needs to follow the cosmic layout of my writing very closely to understand the vast implications involved. Otherwise, the cosmic scale of this book will be lost and misunderstood by many whose intelligence cannot be expanded in this epoch of time to a conscious awareness of our cosmic connections. Elizabeth Clara, Cambridge. The most beautiful and most profound emotion we can experience is the sensation of the mystical. It is the sower of all true science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand rapt in awe, is as good as dead. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty which our dull primitive can comprehend only in their primitive forms, this knowledge, this feeling is at the center of true religiousness. A symbol of man reaching for the moon forward. And he was also a symbol. A symbol of man reaching for the moon and the stars, of man flashing into space in an endless adventure. For as long as man has lived in this world, from the days when he lived in a cave, he has searched for knowledge. He has reached the heights of Everest, the depths of the sea. His aircraft in thousands span the globe and gradually encircle this earth at greater heights and greater speeds, making of what was a vast circumference something that is so puny that it is not surprising that he is reaching out into the vast, limitless, uncharted fields of space. He has reached the moon, the first stage of his journey to other civilizations on other worlds, for make no mistake, we are not alone. This is now proven by archaeologists, scientists and astronomers. The pace of discovery is heightening now that the clues have been established. Almost every day brings amazing and exciting discoveries. Other civilizations from whence we came are out there, and it is there that man's future must lie. Some years ago, when in British intelligence in Malaya fighting the communist bandits hidden in the vast jungles, one felt a sense of awful frustration. Nowhere in the world was the peace. The whole earth was torn by strife, cold war and hot war. Thousands of people said, "Man is making such a mess of life, there is such turmoil. Is it really worth living?" At the time, an Oxford professor came out and lectured to us. He said, "There are masses of Mother Grundy's saying, 'What a dreadful age in which to live.' Do these people realize what a wonderful age it is? We are on the very threshold of leaving this planet and traveling and exploring the vast universe. This is the beginning." He went on to describe the ramjet, or flying stovepipe, as he described it, just a heated stovepipe that would soon project men through space at ever-increasing speeds. A dreadful age indeed. How fortunate we are to be alive, and what wonderful, enthralling achievements we may see in our lifetimes. These pages tell, through personal experience, of an advanced civilization in outer space, a civilization that has already found the secrets of space propulsion. One is enthralled at the beauty and wonder of their silent electrical ships that hover over and have landed on this Earth. Purely imaginary, one might say, until one reads the immense amount of scientific and technical explanation given by the author. The defeat of so-called gravity has long been a dream, with weightlessness being the answer. This, it seems, can only be achieved in the electrical field, and here it is described in absorbing detail for the scientist or the man in the street to perceive. It is indeed true to say that he who first achieves the answers will be complete master of this Earth. But these people from space are not only advanced in the scientific field, they are physically, mentally and spiritually evolved and wish to bring nothing but good to this planet. Let us hope that before man is given the secret, he too will want to take with him peace and goodwill and not the present strife and evils of this earth. Why, whenever there is a reported landing, must people rush for firearms in a panic and start blazing away? Because it is man's instinct of self-preservation and destruction. May we fly peacefully into the unknown one day. May the space people come to us and show us a better way of life before we destroy ourselves and the world. Not only is the technical detail in all fields in this book, but the beauty of universal love as described by the author, who is certainly no ordinary person herself, will never be forgotten. Anthony Fielding, Major British Intelligence Corps. The End.